Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we concluded our review of Maggie's sister Marion Proctor's testimony, and we covered the testimony of her husband Barton Proctor as well. In this installment, we review the testimony of SLED Special Agent David Owen, who interviewed Alex Murdoch after the shootings of Paul and Maggie. That's all coming up right after the break.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It is the morning of February 15th, 2023, day 16 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. As we concluded our last episode, Judge Clifton Newman decided to exclude evidence related to the roadside shooting of the defendant, which occurred several months after the murders and soon after evidence of Alex Murdoch's financial crimes was uncovered by his former law firm, PMPED. As we begin this installment, the state calls their next witness, Special Agent David Owen, to the stand. Agent Owen appears to be in his late 40s. He sports a buzz cut, a reddish mustache, and glasses. He wears a royal blue suit, a sky blue dress shirt, and a red tie. John Metters handles the questioning for the prosecution. He begins by asking the witness about his background and education in law enforcement. Agent Owen tells Metters that he grew up in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and after graduating from college, began his law enforcement career there in the mid-90s. He then moved to Charleston to join the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, or SLED, in 2000. Agent Owen explains that he has primarily worked in the Lowcountry region, assisting with general investigations across 12 counties, including public corruption, violent crimes, and property crimes. After allowing the witness to relay that biographical information to the jury, Prosecutor Metters moves on to the special agent's work on the Murdoch case.
Let's go straight to June 7th, Special Agent. Were you on call June 7th of 2021?
Yes, sir, I was.
Specifically, how did you get the call?
I received the call approximately 10:30 that night. I was in bed trying to go to sleep, and phone rang and was told that I needed to respond to 4147 Moselle Road in Islington, Colleton County. There had been the discovery of two deceased persons at that location.
And how long did it take you to get to 4147 Moselle?
I arrived on scene approximately midnight.
I'm sure it's been said, but it's 4147 Moselle in Colleton County.
Yes, sir, it is.
Now, when you arrived, tell these ladies and gentlemen what you observed.
When I arrived, there was multiple law enforcement and rescue personnel on scene. Of course, I had to find a place to park out of the roadway. Made my way up to the scene. My normal course of business, or the procedure, being that we were requesting agency, I locate the agency that requested us, this being Colleton County, and speak with the supervisors or detectives on scene and say, hey, what's going on? What have you learned so far? What do you need from us? At that time, one of my supervisors, my captain, Ryan Neal, was on scene, and he was already talking with Colleton, so I was briefed on the situation, what was discovered and what had been done so far.
And did you have a liaison, somebody that you requested or told to work with on the scene that night?
Yes, sir. Originally, as I stated, we were called in to assist. So I was paired up with Detective Laura Rutland with the Collin County Sheriff's Office, and I was to assist her in any fashion that she needed.
And again, was that unusual for a local agency to call you in to help with the crime scene?
No, sir. It happens very frequently.
And when you got with Ms. Rutland, tell the folks when you were first at the scene, did you make observations in your mind of the scene itself?
Yes, sir. I observed the scene, kind of figuring out what's going on, started working the walking the outside of the scene, trying to understand the lay of the land, figuring out if anybody had been interviewed already, what methods or avenues were being taken to try to figure out what's going on, secure the area, and whatnot.
And did you see the bodies that were off of Hall and Maggie?
Yes, sir. I was standing outside the crime scene tape, and, you know, what I know now to be Paul Murdoch and Maggie Murdoch, I knew that there was a white male and a white female, but they were covered up with a sheet. I was not able to see them, but I saw where they were.
Did you make any other observations of the actual crime scene there itself then?
Other than the placards or evidence placards that Collin County had put out to protect evidence upon their initial arrival, you know, I didn't go into the scene. Our crime scene unit had not arrived yet. I have a background in crime scene, so I knew not to go in and disturb anything until it was documented properly. I was aware that Collin County had already documented or located and marked some evidence for protection purposes. So I just walked around the crime scene tape. I knew that there were dog kennels on the left. There was a big shed on the right with a large field behind it with another shed. And there were several people and several cars back behind, what I call back behind the crime scene from where I was standing.
And at this point, had you seen the defendant, Alex Murdoch?
I was told that he was with the group of people behind, which was told to me to be some family members and some of his law partners.
And I guess you became, at this point, were you the chief investigating officer?
I don't recall how long, within maybe 30 minutes or so. My supervisors pulled me aside and said, you know, hey, we're actually going to be the lead on this. So my Detective Rutland and my roles kind of reversed, and I became the lead investigator, and she was my assistant.
Y'all still working together?
We were still working together, yes.
Had you ever worked with her before?
No, sir. I knew her, but I had never worked with her before.
Did you think it was important to talk to Alex Murdoch?
I did.
And can you tell the jury specifically how that came about?
Well, I was told that he arrived on scene and discovered his wife and son, and that he had made the 911 call. Being that it was his wife and son, and he found the bodies and made the 911 call, it was paramount that I talk to him. Going into a death scene investigation, homicide investigators are taught to treat every scene as a homicide until determined otherwise, and that encompasses suicide, natural, accidental, or homicide, or unexplained. So automatically I was treating it as a homicide, and I didn't know if it was or not. So it was paramount that I speak with Alec Murdoch to try to determine what he saw, what he experienced, what's going on in their lives, to kind of help guide my investigation as it progressed.
And had the weather started to change about that time?
It had been changing and continued to change. It was raining intermittently as I was coming into Walterboro from Charleston. It would stop raining, it would mist rain, it would heavy rain. So, you know, the weather was also a concern that night, especially being an outside scene.
And that leads into my next question. Where did you request and where did you take the first statement from Alex Murdoch?
When I met Alec Murdoch, there was really nowhere else to interview him except the privacy of my patrol car, which was a Dodge Durango.
We all seen the video, and I'm not going to play it again. The jury will have that. But can you tell us where is your car?
Yes, sir.
So we've seen the video. Where was the camera?
It was a body camera. It's not a fixed in-car camera like in most active patrol cars. But I clipped it to my visor right above me and just angled it towards Mr. Murdoch.
Is that your practice to video when you're potential suspects or do you video?
I video any witness or audio record any witness that I am able to do.
So you're in your driver's seat.
Yes, sir.
Where was the defendant, Mr. Murdoch?
Mr. Murdoch was sitting to my right in the front passenger seat.
And behind him?
Behind him was Detective Rutland.
Okay, and to her left, if you will?
To her left and behind me was Danny Henderson. At that time, I knew an attorney, but I didn't realize his involvement other than an attorney. Later on, I found out that he was a partner and Alec Murdoch's personal attorney.
And how did he get in the car?
I mean, it's common if there's an attorney present that wants to be involved in the interview or sit on the interview, I allow him to sit in the interview. It's not an issue for me.
You said it was fine?
It was fine.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Prosecutor John Metters continues his direct examination of Agent David Owen by asking the witness about Alex Murdoch's behavior in the aftermath of the shootings of Maggie and Paul.
And I want to ask specifically about your observations of the defendant as far as his mind. Did he appear to be under the influence of anything? Any intoxicant or anything else when you were talking to him?
I did not notice any intoxicants, whether it be drugs or alcohol. He didn't smell of alcohol. His eyes weren't, you know, any dilated. They weren't bloodshot. He seemed of full body and mind, other than being distraught that he had discovered his wife and son dead.
Did you have trouble understanding his words?
No, sir, I did not.
Did he appear to have trouble understanding your words?
No, sir, he did not.
Were his answers to your questions subject matter appropriate?
Yes, they were.
And were they timely?
Yes.
And again, without going to the details, did he tell you roughly what happened earlier in the evening, how long he'd been at the house, when he left, when he came back?
Yes, sir. We went over his evening.
And after this statement, before that, when you were out, before you got in the car, were you able just to look at him?
Yes, sir.
Shake his hand?
I did shake his hand.
And then you come up to him, y'all shook hands like that?
Yes, sir. I introduced myself.
What did he say when you introduced yourself?
How you doing? I don't remember exact words, but you know, how you doing? I know you need to talk to me. That type language.
And then could you see anything just from your naked eye? I know you didn't have a microscope, but could you see anything that appeared to be, how did his clothes look?
He had on a white t-shirt. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary on his t-shirt. He had on green cargo khaki type shorts and then I think bright in color. I think later I learned they're orange or pink tennis shoes. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary about his appearance.
After you took this statement, you and Ms. Rutland, did you want to take his clothes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And did you take his clothes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tell the jury how that went about.
Well, it was coming close to the end of the interview, and I was going to discuss collecting his clothes from him, but he had received a call that his oldest son was arriving at the home. Knowing that he needed to go be with his son, I said, I'll catch up with you later. Go ahead. Shortly thereafter, maybe 10, 15 minutes, I went up to the house and told him I needed to get his clothes. I was allowed into the house. There were multiple people inside the house. When you walk in the house, there's a foyer. I walked into the foyer. Immediately to the left, some stairs going upstairs. To the right, I believe it was a dining room, and you walk into the living area. Or living room, met Mr. Murdoch again, told him I needed to collect his clothing. He went to what I now know is the master bedroom towards the left of the house, left of the living room, and he said, sure, and immediately began to disrobe his clothes and hand them to me.
All right, so did you go to the bedroom?
Yes, sir. I stood in the doorway of the bedroom.
So if that's his bedroom, you stood right here?
Yes, sir.
Could you see him changing?
Yes, I did.
Did you give him a little privacy?
I did.
So did he give you the same clothes that he had on?
Yes, sir.
Sure about that?
He still had on the oranges, pink tennis shoes, green shorts, and white t-shirt.
And this is what's been entered as 419.
Prosecutor Metters hands Agent Owen a large evidence box. Owen puts on latex gloves and sifts through the contents of the box. He finds a pair of yellow and red sneakers.
And those are the tennis shoes that you saw Alex Murdoch in, and then
yes, sir.
He took off and gave to you.
Under this light, it's more red, but you know, I considered it orange is pink that night, but these are the shoes that I collected from him.
Do you remember the condition? I mean, how did they feel when you touched?
I mean, they were a little damp. I mean, it was raining that night.
You said damp?
Damp, yes. It was raining that night. Summertime, high humidity, so the ground was, there was a lot of condensation and water on the ground. And these are the bag. This is the bag that I would have put them in. My initials are not on them, but my handwriting says shoes 0140. So that would have been 0140, which would have been the time that I collected the shoes.
At 1:40 a.m.?
Yes, sir.
On June 8th, 2021?
Yes, sir.
Did you make any other observations? Did there appear to be any other stains to your naked eye on those shoes when you saw them at 1:40 a.m. on June 8th of 2021?
No, sir. I did not make any other observations.
I'll show you what's been entered. It's 418.
Agent Owen next retrieves a bag from inside an evidence box.
And tell me if you recognize this.
This is a bag that's sealed up, but I know that it's a T-shirt. It's got my writing on it with the time of 0141 or 1:41 a.m. Again, my initials are they're not on it, but I do recognize my signature or my writing.
You put 1:41 a.m.?
Yes, sir.
Now, had you packaged those clothes separately?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Why?
Again, with my experience in law enforcement, my experience in crime scene, anytime you collect a piece of evidence, you keep it separate so you don't cross-contaminate.
And that was the shirt?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
John Metters lifts out another bag from inside the box.
What is also contained in 418 that's been entered? Can you tell me what that is?
These are the shorts, 0141 in my handwriting. Again, my initials and date are not on it, but I do recognize my handwriting.
Could you open those, please?
Agent Owen opens the bag and reveals a pair of brown shorts.
Now, those are the pants that you saw defendant Alex Murdaugh wearing on June 7th, June 8th?
Yes, sir.
2021?
Yes, sir.
And those are the same pants that you took off of Alex Murdaugh. Is that correct? Describe when you saw these pants on June 7th, June 8th, early a.m. morning, Special Agent David Owen. How did they look to you?
Green shorts. I didn't notice any stains on them. Nothing was very apparent to the naked eye. They appeared just to be normal, clean shorts.
And we've got these cuttings in the front. Those weren't there, were they?
No, sir. They were complete shorts. Those cuttings were done during evidence processing.
At some point, maybe toward the end, I can't remember. I think it's toward the end. You kind of reach over and just do like this to Alex Murdaugh. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I console him. He was upset.
And that's just, you did that because that's you?
That's just who I am.
And when you got to the house and after you had collected these clothes, did you do anything else at the house?
I didn't do anything at the house. I mean, like I stated, there were other people in the house, law partners, family members, people moving about. I did look around to make general observations. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Nothing seemed torn up or out of place. It was the first time I'd ever been in there, but it didn't look like there was a fight or a scuffle or, going in, being observant. I didn't notice. I went in through the front door, which was the only door I accessed the house from. I didn't notice any forced entry or, when the door was open for me, it was opened as a normal door should. Met Mr. Murdaugh and collected the clothing. I don't know if I spoke with Mr. Murdaugh or someone else inside the house. I think it was Mr. Murdaugh. He had indicated early on in one of the initial interview that he had attempted to contact some of Paul's friends, and one of those friends was Nolan Tootin. And he had indicated that Nolan was at the house during that interview. So when I went to the house to collect the clothing, I asked if Nolan was present. He said, yes, he was, and pointed to him. I noticed that he was sitting on a couch in the living room. So I introduced myself to Nolan and conducted an interview with Nolan, again, in my vehicle for privacy.
So you had located Nolan Tootin in the residence and then conducted an interview with him in your car?
Yes, sir.
And were they – how many people were in the house? We're into the early morning of June 8th of 2021, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I mean, how many people were inside approximately?
I didn't go in every room. I didn't see every single person, but, 8-10 people from, first glance.
And had someone at SLED, you mentioned there was crime tape, did someone from SLED arrive at the crime scene where the two bodies were, and were they processing that?
Yes, sir, they were.
And did SLED and or the locals have that secure?
Yes, sir. There were several investigators from Collin County. Two other investigators from my office, Agent Altman and Agent Wiggins, were there. My Lieutenant Charles Gent arrived on scene, as well as my captain was already there when I arrived. So There were several officers, several investigators down at that scene.
And was that scene secured and guarded until all the potential evidence at that crime scene was collected, as far as you know?
As far as I know, yes, sir.
Now, there was also a vehicle down there. Did you determine where defendants, if he personally had a vehicle that he'd been in that night?
Yes, sir. There was a dark in color Chevrolet Suburban down there.
What, if anything, was done with that vehicle that night?
Well, early the next morning on Tuesday, June 8th, once we completed the scene around the kennel area and sheds, that vehicle was secured and towed to the Collin County Sheriff's Office so that it may be later processed.
So it was taken into law enforcement custody?
Yes, sir.
There's been pictures and testimony about the phone that was on Paul.
Yes, sir. Once I left the house, our crime scene units, that what they go in to a scene and they look for evidence, document evidence, and collect evidence before anybody really goes in to manipulate the scene from there or alter the scene. So once a majority of the evidence or all the evidence, not all the evidence, a majority of the evidence on approach to the victims were documented and collected, We went in and started investigating the bodies. The coroner was, of course, with us. And once we took the sheet off of Paul, there was a cell phone that was placed on his rear end and on his right side.
And if you'll think back to your first interview, you'd already had your first interview.
Yes, sir.
How did the defendant tell you that phone had got on his backside?
Mr. Murdoch stated that, you know, he tried to check Paul for a pulse, and he, you know, tried to turn him over, but thought better of it. And when he did, Paul's phone popped out of his pocket. And Mr. Murdoch had picked the phone up and stated that he thought of not the exact words, but this is what he said, was he thought of doing something up with it, thought better of it, and put it back down.
Popped out of his pocket.
Yes, sir.
And what did you do with that phone?
Once it was photographed and documented that it was on Paul's rear end, I collected the phone. Our crime scene unit doesn't normally collect electronic devices. They don't process the electronic devices. It's normally the case agent or one of the agents on scene will collect that phone. So I collected the phone. When we collect electronic devices, we normally put them in airplane mode, disconnect any power sources, take out SIM cards. Once I collected Paul's phone, I attempted to put it in airplane mode, and of course you have to try to activate it. I noticed that it had a dead battery and would not power on at all, so I secured it as evidence in my vehicle.
You attempted to put it in airplane mode, why?
So that any outside sources, if someone has your access to your phone, like your iCloud account or your Google account, if you have an Android phone, you could remote access and wipe the phone, or anybody could, or, you know, some of the newer phones, you can use a location service, even though the phone is off, to find where that phone is. So we put it in airplane mode and pulled the SIM card out. But with the, like I said, with the battery being dead, I couldn't put it in airplane mode.
Did Paul's phone become,
or was it a significant piece of evidence in this case?
Yes, it was.
With that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Alex Murdoch. Please join us on our next installment as we continue our review of the testimony of SLED Special Agent David Owen. Also, check out the Ambie-nominated crime story podcast Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law and Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.